And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go. What the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Greetings, greetings, and salutations. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Sports Talk. It's a Thursday. When we signed on yesterday at 4 o'clock, I was like, 72 hours, Miami and Florida. A day passed, 48 hours. Miami and Florida. I heard an interesting comment earlier. I saw it on Twitter. I think they were probably listening to CBS Sports Radio earlier. One of the guests I heard on with Brandon Tierney today said, is it me or are people being more critical of the NFL's exhibition season than More critical than usual? And I was like, you really kind of have to take everything with a grain of salt because of social media. I mean, let's face it. Once upon a time, even 10 years ago, when you had bloggers and message boards, at least you had to go to those sites to hear what somebody who was, you know, not hired to do a radio show, write a column for a newspaper, be a broadcaster, work for a college, whatever it is. And it's part of the fun. I don't necessarily see it as a negative. I mean, when you get some of the trolls and the vile people and the cesspool that could be Twitter and related platforms, but if you're a college football program, or in this case, an NFL franchise, I mean, especially when it's the national game, or, you know, even at this point with the expansion and the size of the NFL network, because what's the Fox game tonight? Because, you know, even though it's going to be a lot of baseball with pennant implications, because the NFL is the NFL and it rules all and it's the beast, whoever is the Fox national game. So you got Giants, Bengals, you've got, oh, by the way, what a coincidence, Jaguars and Dolphins. The NFL Network tomorrow has Le Bruins and Le Buccaneers, Bills, Lions tomorrow. Oh, by the way, that's scintillating. Saturday you get Cards, Vikings on the NFL Network, Texans, Cowboys on the NFL Network. Then the Seahawks and Chargers, a game we'll also have for you right here on Saturday. And then the Sunday Nighter. Oh, by the way, Steelers and Titans. And, you know, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the Titans in the last couple of years have really garnered a lot of attention because they were one of the most nondescript franchises for several years. You know, they picked Mariota, who it's kind of interesting that I'm not willing to use the word polarizing, but there are a lot of people who feel, and I think they're justified, that this is a really important year for him. And I've noticed he's become a source of many Twitter debates. And because I follow a lot of, you know, Duck fans, those, and the default setting to defend blindly when it comes to Marcus is, I wouldn't say it's amazing, because I would assume the same thing happens with other fan bases when their guy goes off to college. Remember, if you get, for example, especially a program like Oregon, which, although in the last, 20 years between Achille and Harrington and Mariota, has had, a 2, a 3, and a 3 getting picked. But there's that tendency to be very protective of what you consider you know, near and dear to your heart, especially when you consider what they meant to the program at the time. In 1998, Achilles Smith led the most potent Oregon attack ever. It was unbelievable. It wasn't even close. What did he end up with, like 35, 38 touchdowns? I mean, it was, there were rarely a Duck quarterback that threw 20. And then, of course, fast forward 3 years to Joey leading the Ducks to back-to-back top 10 finishes for the first time in the modern era. And then, you know, Dixon's run at the Heisman in 2007 before he tore up his knee. And then, of course, you know, Marcus with the three consecutive seasons, winning bowl games, two majors, a playoff game, and Heisman and all that. So there's a natural tendency to be defensive. But there's also something you have to understand. When your favorite college player leaves the nest and goes to a big city, an NFL city, yet nobody cares where he played his school ball. Believe me, I can attest to that perfectly, being from a major city. When a guy came to the Jets or Giants, trust me, nobody gave the first crap about where he went to college. It was how he played as a professional. So you see a lot, and let's face it, what Marcus has accomplished in the pros for the rational, for the neutral-minded, it for a number two pick, it hasn't been fantastic. It hasn't been off the charts. It hasn't left no room for debate, discussion, or doubt. So for he and the guy who went one this year, huge season, huge, huge. That'll be interesting. You know, we often talk about coaches on the hot seat, and I think Nick and I touched on this maybe the week before I went on vacation about, you know, the quarterbacks who this was their year. If they didn't come across the goods with the goods, they were not going to be the quarterback in that city come 2020. With some of the older guys, be it Drew Brees, be it Ben Roethlisberger, it'll be a matter of, is there any drop-off? Is it time to be thinking about a replacement? Because, you know, it's not going to be a matter of, well, the patience level is minimal, and if you don't succeed big time, you're out. Oh, I absolutely put Cam Newton in there. Because he's only, remember, he signed through next year, and with almost no dead money. They were talking about it today.
Tepper's is not going to be. He just took over the franchise and can play the entire last season on a hurt shoulder, and he's coming back from a rehab. You know, he's coming back from an injury. Hey, okay, but quarterbacks are starting to show that they can play into their mid-30s and still look like a decent NFL quarterback.
Except one thing. Go ahead, finish what you say and allow me my exception.
Tepper's just took over that franchise. He's trying to have some goodwill with the team. Cam Newton is the face of that franchise, albeit, you know, obviously every quarterback is the face of their franchise. He would be run out of town if he said, Cam Newton's not good enough.
Unless he stunk this year.
I still think they would have to work. They would find something else to work with him. He won them an MVP, and he took them to a Super Bowl almost on an undefeated season. Like, albeit, yeah, Cam is super emotional.
That's 2015 now.
Cam is still that kind of player. You're not walking away from Cam Newton. Because there aren't that many more quarterbacks that are better than him that you're going to be able to get. Teams, if they find even a halfway decent guy like Andy Dalton, teams are trying to lock them up because they're afraid that if Andy Dalton walks away, he's going to become something else, and we've got to hope he can become something here. Cam Newton's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. You're not.
Is he?
I would think so. I would put maybe 10 to 12 range. I mean, he's in that tier, that upper tier of quarterbacks. You're not going to find someone better than him.
As opposed to Brees or Peyton or Brady, who the organization basically put a protective shell around them, nobody has taken more of a pounding than Newton. So is he the kind of guy who could play in the? I mean, he's got 1,000 carries.
That's what he is, though. Like, then they can use Christian McCaffrey more, and a lot of his carries are, you know, a lot of them are at the goal line. He had in his rookie season, you know, he had his rookie of the year where he just ran crazy all over everybody. He's not doing that so much. I don't remember Carolina running, you know, like an RPO system offense where Cam is just, you know, their scrambler who's just going to run all of the time. He's just a big dude who, you know, when the opportunity will arise, yeah, he's going to try and get an extra 5 yards. You can't walk away from who are they going to get that's better than Cam Newton? Because teams aren't just like letting their quarterbacks get to a contract year and letting them go. It's just not happening.
But I'm just saying that he hasn't taken the most hits of a quarterback. I think he's taken more hits than all the other quarterbacks combined, if you account for sacks and runs over the duration of his career.
So who would?
And remember, a shoulder injury. Oh man, that just lends itself to more pounding.
So let's just say, even without knowing his contract details, they just cut
I do Cam. Know his contract. Okay, so he's going to play this year, and if they go 6-10, and he only makes it through 10 games, and it's obvious that maybe his durability is called into account because of the style he's played, and if they wanted to get rid of him, they'll have an out. I'm not saying they will, but the opportunity is going to present itself where they won't cripple themselves financially.
Because I don't foresee him going.
I like Cam, by the way.
I know. Okay, that's fine. I'm just saying that Cam Newton is a good enough quarterback to where you would have to be an absolute idiot to walk away from him because I'm scared he's taken some hits already. Like that, it just doesn't sit well.
So
with
this
me.
Is a no for you.
No, I think that would be the dumbest thing that Tepper's could possibly do as a new owner or their GM or whoever would be like, Cam Newton's taken some tackles. It's time to let him go.
It's not some. It's 1,000 okay, it's extra.
Sometimes he scores a touchdown, he doesn't get hit. I'm saying, who would they replace Cam Newton with?
58 touchdowns, so 942 hits.
Fair enough. That still sounds like a lot. Who would they replace Cam Newton with? Like, you've got a guy who's built to try and be a somewhat mobile quarterback. If you're going to walk away from Cam Newton, you're assuming you're going to get someone better.
Of course.
Who would that be?
That would have to be a draft, or if Brady got cloned.
Exactly. So,
by the way, this is an unbelievable text we just got. The only reason Newton has taken more hits is because Ricky Williams didn't play quarterback. Everybody let that settle in for a second, because that's really friggin' funny. Okay? I can't even tell you how much I appreciate that one. Oh, my God. So the no-brainers that nobody's going anywhere, obviously Brady until he decides, Sam Darnold etched, Jackson in Baltimore, I was just going to call him Major Mikowski. Baker Mayfield in Cleveland is pretty etched. The Red Rifle in Cincinnati, I would say this is what you would call a walk year for him. Would that be accurate? Deshaun Watson, stable. If he's healthy, I mean, obviously Luck isn't going anywhere. We mentioned Marcus. Jacksonville, I know they signed him for big money, but could we be realistic about Nick Foles in Jacksonville? He's never been a starting quarterback except like that one year with Chip Kelly. So, I mean.
And the time when he won a Super Bowl, he was also
the
starting
quarterback.
Yeah, well,
I just said he started it for about an hour and ended up engineering an unbelievable playoff run. Mahomes, stable. Phillip Rivers is stable, but, he's in that Big Ben area where all of a sudden he's getting older. Flacco now in Denver, I would say there's no chance he's not their quarterback next year.
Who's the guy that they...
Carr, the Raiders. I would say that this is an important season for him as well.
Who did the Broncos draft? The guy that Vic Fangio is like, he doesn't look like a quarterback yet. I'll let you know when he's a quarterback. It's just some dumb football guy quote that he dropped that I forgot the guy's name, and I probably shouldn't have brought it up without looking it up. But
from this year?
They drafted another quarterback this year, some guy who's 6'6 and tall and, whatever. John Elway has a type.
It's Drew Lock.
Yes, that's the guy. That's the guy Vic Fangio said, I'll tell you
he doesn't look like a quarterback. I'll tell you, I love when guys say
I'll tell you when he's a quarterback. He doesn't look like a quarterback right now. That's Vic Fangio for you. I'm looking over the quarterbacks through the standings. I don't see a team in the NFC that would feel comfortable cutting their quarterback as of this moment.
Well, what kind of commitment does Washington have?
Well, they just drafted Haskins, and they gave Alex Smith all of the money in the world.
Right.
That's a set situation.
With him, though, it's like, could we be first concerned about him walking before he could play quarterback again?
Well, no, I'm saying they've moved on at that point. They have Haskins.
Yeah,
he's got their
Wentz
5 years.
Wentz is a commit. Dak will be a commit. And beyond Eli, obviously, you got Jones. Trubisky isn't going anywhere, neither is Stafford or Rodgers. Who am I missing? Minnesota. Cousins?
No.
Did we go through this already?
We did, yes. We did this exact show, and I told you there's like five teams that maybe have a quarterback that won't be
didn't
around.
Did we decide that five teams have Kirk Cousins?
Also that one.
As quarterback. That is so sick. Yeah, Cousins is the Minnesota quarterback.
Yes.
Stop. And you told me no last time. Yeah, what are you doing?
Because the last five Vikings quarterbacks have all looked the same. They're just Sam Bradford.
Keenum. Cousins. Yeah,
Cousins,
you know what?
And Sam Bradford. They're the same person.
So in the South, Breeze is not going anywhere until he greenlights it. We just talked about Newton. Chances are really good he's the quarterback next year. Obviously, Matt Ryan's not going anywhere with Atlanta. Winston, this is a big year.
Yeah, sorry. That's the one team in the NFC where you're like, next year their quarterback is kind of in question as to who it's going to be, pending injury from all of these guys.
And then, like you said, in the West, you got the Rams. Goff is the guy. Russ Wilson is the guy. Arizona, they just switched their entire franchise around to turn the offense over to Kingsbury, and they drafted Kyler Murray. And I don't know what the financial commitment is, but if Garoppolo gets hurt again, that's 2 years, a lot of money, and just traditionally, if he's hurt again, then it's not really an option if he could play or not, if he plays another four freaking games. So, that's pretty much the picture, and it's interesting in that there's a substantial majority of the teams, unless there's a tragic circumstance or a horrible injury, are going to have the same guy under center. So of 32 teams, I think we just figured out 24 are like locks to have the same starter next year than they did this year.
I have Miami, Cincinnati, Tennessee, Oakland, and Tampa as the five teams that could possibly have new quarterbacks next year pending injury.
I still think Tennessee might.
I said Tennessee. You did? That's part of my five. All right. That's it. Those are five teams that are also not supposed to be very good, that will be drafting pretty high again, and they will have the ability to choose between your Jalen.
Did you put Buffalo in there?
No, because they have
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen.
It's a rookie quarterback, and what if he stinks? Because he was bad last year.
Because he was okay. He started to run the ball a whole bunch. He was in a weird situation where they wanted to protect him. They made him the third string quarterback. The first two guys went down. He was thrown into the mix. I think he sustained a minor injury, and then he led the team in rushing. Until that fifth year option kicks in with a first year quarterback, he basically is the cheapest person on the team.
Question here. Football fans, not from Corvallis or Buffalo, how many would have guessed that Derek Anderson started two games for Buffalo last year? Not Beaver fans, not Buffalo Bill fans, and you don't work covering the NFL. Percentage of football fans, I would say between 2.5% and 3% would have guessed that.
Some crazy fantasy person out there I took a flyer on Derek Anderson 1 week because I thought he would be in the mix.
Huge weeks. By the way, he went 0-2, no touchdowns, four interceptions. All right.
The half Nathan Peterman.
AKA what Peterman aspired to. All right. Let's bounce to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and bring in Josh. Josh, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, I had to call in and defend the Titans a little bit. I mean, Mariota, five offensive coordinators in 5 years, the guy's been dealt a pretty weak hand. And, I think he's done the best that he can out of that situation. And, if he can stay healthy this year, and it's a proving year, I think he's going to have a good year. And we're not a bad team. I mean, we were one game away from making a playoff last year, maybe the playoffs 2 years ago. We stay healthy and we keep Marcus upright. I think we have a shot at winning that division.
Winning a division, huh? Do you think what percentage of Titan fans had a near coronary where in an exhibition game, Mariota decided to somersault into the end zone for 2 points?
I had a coronary myself, I'll tell you that. But I do got to ask you this question, though. I don't know why everybody has got Marcus on such a short leash, but everybody gives Andrew Luck the benefit of the doubt all the time. That guy cannot stay healthy, but yet he seems to be so secure in his job.
Oh, no, you're spot on. There have been a couple of guys who have come out and been like, who wrote the rule in the NFL Bible that you're not allowed to criticize Andrew Luck?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, too, with Marcus, it has a lot to do with his teammates love him.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think that has going to have a lot to do with the longevity he's going to have there. You know, as long as he can stay healthy, like I said, I think it's a proven uniform. And I think it's starting to distance himself from people like Jameis Winston and stuff like that.
All right. Hey, good to talk to you, Josh. Having Delanie Walker back, even though he's, what now, 34, 35, but he has always been a good source of oxygen for Mariota. I mean, you know, Taywan Taylor was a guy they had high hopes for, had a so-so year. They've never really had, you know, when they, Corey Davis was the guy who played for one of the mid-majors and, like, rewrote the record book, like, at Western Michigan or something.
Western Michigan, yeah.
And they spent a fifth overall pick on him in 2017. He missed not quite half the year, came back last year, and he did double his receiving total. So, no, and he did come out a year early. So they have absolutely the P word for their offense. If he stays healthy, if Henry could run the ball, if some of these guys upgrade, if in fact Walker is healthy and could be the kind of critical receiver that Marcus goes to, be it in the red zone or to move the chains on third down, then they could be a better offense than they were last year. Well, they've got to be a better offense than they were last year because they just... You know, when you look at the touchdown to interception ratio, really not that good. I mean, they had 16 touchdown passes. They've got a good defense, I'll tell you that much. But they've got to be more explosive. And like I said, it's the last year of his contract. And as far as who they play this year out of league, let me take a little peegaloo. They start. Wow, that's a very interesting opening game. They start at Cleveland. They have to play at Jacksonville, at Atlanta, at Denver, at Carolina. Obviously, they have their conference games. And wow, they also draw the Chiefs. Oh, so they play the West. They got the Chiefs and the Chargers at home. Do they play the East? No, they just have the Bills. So, no, it's an important season for that franchise, like Nick alluded to. Now they've got a new owner who... now, you what's the name that you mentioned?
Tepperz?
Yeah, so he's the new owner or...
Of like the Panthers?
I'm thinking, I got Tennessee and Carolina confused again. That stupid teal color. Never mind. The Tennessee ownership, Amy Adams Strunk, it's the same ownership since they were the Oilers. All right, so Steve, go sit down for a second and think about what you did. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You know, we should be keeping track of that. There are certain things, like the trouble I had with the Astros being an American League team. I confuse the Panthers and the Titans all the time. There are certain players, and by the way, this isn't like in the last couple of years, so we could blame it on age. This is just a mental block that I've had for the better part of eternity. All right, before we break, mentioned yesterday we've got a new very welcome sponsor to the big program here at KUJZ, SeatGeek, fabulous ticket search engine. And they have signed on, and, you know, they alleviate a lot of issues because sometimes all you want to know is, what's available? How much is it going to be? Can I go? Am I in the ballpark? Can I get the price range? And it's like by the time you sign on, go click, click, you're like, oh, this is easy. This makes my life simple. And, you know, one of the things I love about it is the people who use it help guide you. They offer up reviews, what they love about it. They've got tens and tens and tens of thousands of five-star reviews. The customer satisfaction rate is through the roof. And what they do is they basically go here, 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 millions of tickets all over the web, and there they are. Right in front of you. It rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10. You get the interactive seat map. It's something I've used the last time we went to Yankee Stadium. And it was, like I said, I didn't have to plan a month and ahead. We finally nailed down that my cousin was going to be there, his kids were going to be there, my sister was going to be able to go. It was about 8 days before the game, and we were able to get 10 good tickets at Yankee Stadium for a really good price with a click, click, and a send. It was a beautiful thing. And I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the fastest and easiest way to find tickets. In fact, like I said, I've used it recently. And hey, football season's coming, the home stretch of baseball season. It's not that far out to college basketball season, NBA, NHL, and all that. Oh, and there are also events. You want to go see a show, you want to go see a concert. SeatGeek is your answer. And you could also, Nick, you take it from here, because this is yesterday where I was like, I didn't have the right code. I do now, but I trust you more.
SeatGeek will give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code. So first off, download the SeatGeek app today. Then when you're finding your tickets, once you've got them, put in promo code THESCORE, one word, THESCORE, for $10 off on your first purchase. Promo code THESCORE for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Do that today. Get it done.
It's called synchronicity. We're going to take a break. We'll come back after an update. We'll hear our interview with Colorado coach Mel Tucker talking Pac-12 football next. 95.3 The Score.
Well, you know, we stopped by two places, Alabama and Georgia, where there's familiarity. And the blueprint that we have for off-season development, spring practices, strength and conditioning are very similar. And just wanted the whole staff to see exactly how it's run and what it looks like when it's, you know, all the wheels are in motion at 100 miles per hour. And we saw that, and we got to see some of the players.
Coach Cristobal was on ESPN Radio with Freddie and Fitzsimmons talking about visiting Bama and Auburn, all they benefited from it. And actually, it's something he's talked about previously, but, you know, tick, 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 with that big game against Auburn coming up, obviously, early in the season, Oregon absolutely has the focal point, the spotlight shining on them pretty brightly, probably as brightly as since they played for the Natty in 2014, and there were still high hopes, and they were still nationally ranked in the preseason polls prior to the 2015 season. But anyway, Pac-12 play starts in a week. Oh, no, wait. It starts Saturday. That's right. Arizona's at Hawaii Saturday. But then a week from today, got lots and lots of action, and our intern, Sam, over the last week or so has been working hard, doing a great job getting interviews with folks from a lot of the programs in the conference. And this is his chat with Mel Tucker of Colorado coming at you, 95.3 The Score.
Joining me now is a man with a coaching resume that is tough to match and includes stints with Michigan State, LSU, Ohio State, the Cleveland Browns, Jacksonville Jaguars, Chicago Bears, Alabama, and most recently as the defensive coordinator at Georgia. He is now the head coach of the Colorado Buffaloes, going into his first season in Boulder. Follow him on Twitter, at @coach_mtucker. Mr. Mel Tucker, coach, where are we talking to you from today?
I'm right here in Boulder at our Champion Center, our brand new facility.
Coach, the first thing I noticed when I was looking into you and your program a little bit was I saw your Twitter page, I saw your bio, and you have hashtag relentless. What does that mean to you and your program?
Yeah, relentless has two components. It's high velocity and it's nonstop. And relentless is a mentality. It's a way of life. It's an approach to day-to-day operations, and it applies to everything that we do on and off the field, academics and athletics.
Coach, you're coming into a program that has a tremendous amount of history, but has seen some recent struggles. Since joining the Pac-12, the Buffaloes are 34-66. What kind of changes can we expect to see in your first year in Boulder?
Yeah, the first thing we wanted to do in recruiting was we wanted to get bigger. So we were able to bring in some bigger bodies on our offense and defensive lines. We made some changes in our strength and conditioning. We added some staff and put a more of an emphasis on strength and conditioning so we could be bigger, faster, stronger. Our goal is to be the best conditioned team in America, and we train at altitude. And it's just an overall culture change in terms of a culture of accountability, working with a sense of urgency, attention to detail, you know, competing each and every day, the mentality of I have to prove myself each and every day and not being entitled. And so those are the things that I think I'm confident that will be difference makers for us.
Those sound like the type of things that will serve your team very well. I must say, at the quarterback position, your team has a player who I would call one of the more underrated players in the conference, in Steven Montez. He has definitely had some ups and downs throughout his career at Colorado, going 12-15 in his starts, but he's definitely shown signs that he is the real deal. How can we expect to see Steven used in the offense, and what can his leadership bring your team in your first season?
He's got outstanding leadership abilities. He's played a lot of football. He's very charismatic. He's smart. You know, he's a good teammate, and he cares about football. He loves the game. He's got tremendous arm talent. He can make every throw. He's really sharp mentally with having command of the offense with our checks. He does a lot for us at the line of scrimmage. He's got mobility. He can move the pocket. If things break down, he can pull it down and run and get us a first down. So, you know, he checks a lot of boxes for us. We've got to help Steven. We've got to give him a running game, which is what we're, you know, something that we're going to do, which will open up some play action for us. Obviously, you know, LaVisca is a very talented player, and so is Katie Nixon, but we have some other talented guys at the receiver position, and we've got some young backs that, you know, people haven't seen yet that I think can help us where we can rotate, you know, three and four guys back there. So, you know, Steven's going to continue to get better. You know, we got to protect him. We got to play good around him, and we got to support him, but I have a lot of confidence in him.
A player in position you just mentioned alongside Steven Montez, the receivers in LaVisca Chenault Jr. He's one of the best receivers in this conference. What can we expect to see from him specifically and the rest of your very deep wide receiver core this fall?
Yeah, well, he's one of the more versatile players in the country. There's a lot that he can do. We're going to continue to use him in a lot of different ways. He looks really good right now. He's had a really good summer. He's got another year of experience under his belt. But you know, what we have to do is we have to make sure that some of these other players that we have, these other skill guys, can share the load. We want to have balance on offense. We don't want people just to be able to hone in on LaVisca. You know, other guys are going to have to be able to step up and make plays so we can have balance on offense. It's good. He's going to make them better, and those guys are going to make him better.
In another position that you mentioned a little bit earlier, the running back position, just at a glance, it seems like a very inexperienced position. How do you strategize not only the rushing attack, but also pass protection with such a young group?
Well, the number one thing is ball security. We've got talented guys that can run the ball. Ball security is job security, first and foremost. And then also pass protection. You know, so the guys that can run hard, hit the hole, take care of the football, you know, be relentless and fall forward for 2 yards, okay, and pound people, and guys that can hold up in pass protection so we can function in the passing game, those are the guys that are going to play. And I think we've got, you know, several guys that have the ability to do that.
So far, Coach, we've spent a lot of time on the offensive side of the ball, but we've seen from your resume that you're actually a defensive guy, being Georgia's defensive coordinator last season. That team was 15th in the nation in points against. The Buffaloes were 70th in the category last season. While completely flipping this in a year would be a tremendous ask, there are definitely things you can look for to see that improvement. How did you and your staff plan to revamp this defense, and what are some of the signs of improvement that you'll be looking for as a coach?
Well, we're adding more depth on the defensive line. You know, we've got some junior college players and some freshmen that we've added to our defensive line. because the number one thing, first thing you have to do is you have to get a stop the run and make teams one-dimensional. So we have to be stout in the trenches with the defensive line, outside backers and inside backers. Now, obviously, we want to have a defense that is dynamic, that's aggressive, and that's comprehensive enough that we can handle any type of offense that we face. You know, in order to do that, you have to have multiple schemes, you know, first, second, and third down packages. You know, but the key to it is to make sure that, you know, our players can play fast, and what we do is hard for our opponents, but easy for us to execute. And so, you know, that's what we're working towards. We're going to figure out what our players can do best, and then we're going to fit our schemes around those guys. But things that are non-negotiable, you know, playing with effort, playing with toughness, mental and physical, and knowing what to do. You know, you do those things and you take the ball away and force takeaways, you got a chance to play good defense.
Besides some of the names that we've mentioned so far, Coach, on either side of the ball, who would you say are some of the players that the general Pac-12 audience may not be super aware of, but you think could really make a big splash for your team in this conference this season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously on defense, everyone knows about Nate Landman. You know, Mustafa Johnson, I think, is a heck of a player. Carson Wells is an outside backer. He's had a really good camp so far. He had a good spring. He was very steady for us. Jalen Sammy is a big physical nose guard that was injured a year ago that had a really good spring. He's picked up where he left off. You know, so I think those are guys that you can look for offensively. I really love Kobe Purcell. He's playing center and guard. I like Tim Bonnot. He plays center and guard. Will Sherman is an excellent tackle. We've got a grad transfer, Arlington Hambright from Oklahoma State. And then, you know, we've got some receivers that have really stepped up. Maurice Bell, Daniel Arias, Demetrius Stanley. You know, those are guys that have really stepped up. Tony Brown. So, you know, I'm excited about, you know, some of those guys that, you know, maybe the rest of the Pac-12 doesn't know about right now.
We'll let you go in just a second, Coach. Lastly, though, taking a glance at your guys' schedule, no doubt it's very difficult this season. It involves home games against Nebraska, USC, Washington, Stanford, road games at Arizona State, Oregon, Washington State, Utah. As a first-year head coach, what is your approach to such a tough road, and how do you, week in and week out, have your guys ready for these difficult opponents?
Yeah, well, you know, our approach will be similar going into every week. You know, it's all about preparation. We have a really good coaching staff. We're going to do a great job scouting our opponents. We'll break them down. We'll know who their best players are. We'll know what we have to take away, you know, what players we have to take away and what, you know, where we need to focus our efforts defensively, offensively. We'll know, you know, what defenses do best and maybe what some of their weaknesses are and try to exploit those. But it's all about preparation. At the end of the day, you know, everyone's got good players. It's going to be a lot about what we do, you know, how we play, how we execute, how disciplined we are. Are we able to play longer and harder? How physical we are, our technique and our fundamentals. Those are the things that are going to make the difference, you know, having the poise and the patience to be able to beat good teams. I mean, you know, it's hard to win football games, but if you believe in what you're doing, you play together as a team, you play hard, you're physical, you know, you can put yourself in a position in the fourth quarter to win these games, and that's what our plan is.
Follow him on Twitter @coach_mtucker. The Colorado Buffaloes kick off the season August 30th in Denver versus Colorado State. That is 7 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Mountain time on ESPN. Coach, thanks so much for joining me, and good luck this season.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good luck to you guys.
There you go, Coach Tucker, who last 3 years was the defensive coordinator and defensive back coach for all those good Georgia teams. He worked for Saban in 2015 as an assistant head coach responsible for the defensive backs. I mean, he's got a terrific resume. He was a defensive coordinator for the Bears. He was an interim coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't think we've, in the history of doing the show, we've ever mentioned the Jacksonville Jaguars as many times on one. That's like the fifth time their name has come up.
Like 2-3 years ago, they were like in the AFC Championship game. I'm pretty sure we didn't talk about them once.
Except that game. He by the way, he's a defensive back coach because he was a really good defensive back. He played on Wisconsin Rose Bowl team, I think, in 93. You know, as they started to rise from the ashes, he was part of the roster that really put Wisconsin almost back then on an even par with Wisconsin, with Michigan and Ohio State in the original Big Ten. Then he got his first big-time gig working for Nick Saban at LSU. Then he moved on to Ohio State. He was a defensive backs coach when they won the Natty in 2002. He spent a lot of time in the NFL, and now he's got the difficult task of bringing Colorado, because I've mentioned this. I know we're running a little late, but Colorado has been a one-year wonder. In 2016, they won the South. Otherwise, the other, I think it's 7 years, they've got like 11 conference wins. I mean, they've been a disaster. So with luck, as far as if you're a Buffs fan, he'll be the guy to move this program forward. All right, we'll we'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll wrap up the 4 o'clock hour of Sports Talk next. 95.3 The Score.
When Kelly Bryant left for Missouri after week number four, it became his team, and he just got better and better and better and better as the season went on, and had the performance of a lifetime against Alabama in the national championship. So of all the players in college football, he'd be the one I'm probably most intrigued by, just to see what he's going to look like with an entire offseason working with the ones and kind of getting a little bit deeper into the nuances of that offense.
Ah, nuances of an offense. Nobody asked you. Welcome back. Sports Talk 95.3 The Score. By the way, that's Greg McElroy of ESPN, the player he's looking most forward to seeing this year. And it's like, I think a lot of people are on board with that whole Trevor Lawrence, the guy who just absolutely tore up Alabama in the Natty last year. USA Today, obviously, we talk with George Schroeder each week as we welcome you back into the home stretch of the 4 o'clock hour. They have a couple of top 10 college football coaches on the hot seat. Now, every year this comes up, I have a conversation, and there's almost, I don't know, an arrogance or a condescension about it, because the journalist who writes about it, Paul Meyerberg, he's not just looking at it as the most high profile. He's looking at the 130 FBS coaches who, if their seasons don't go in the right direction, lose their jobs. You know, to you or I, we might be focused on Auburn or USC or another coach, Willie Taggart's on the list, even though it's just the second, because you're familiar with it. They're high-profile programs. They're guys everybody seems to know. But, you know, just because Chris Ash works at Rutgers and most of us around here could give a crap about the Scarlet Knights.
Well, you're now heavily invested in the Scarlet Knights because of Artur Sitkowski, because you have a lightning round question that's been put out there.
All
on
right,
him,
but so. Say we were normal people.
Ooh.
Ouch. I know, I don't even know if I want to put that out there. But, I mean, you wouldn't even think, well, they stink. They're garbage. They're the worst thing that's ever happened to college football. They played the first game, and they should have quit after the first game 150 years ago. Would have made everything a lot easier on people in Jersey. But, you know, the bottom line is, if Chris Ash loses his job, you know, his family, his staff, you know, it's kind of a big deal. I mean, for example, he's got Clay Helton one, and I think that's the consensus. I mean, USC had a losing year in a season where the conference was deemed as down. So that's like double WTF. Bob Davey, the former analyst and Notre Dame coach, would most people even be aware that he's back in coaching at New Mexico? he seemed to offer a little jolt, a jolt to the program. They went to bowl games back to back, but now he's gone 3-9 the past 2 years. He was suspended by the university for allegations about a physical assault involving players. He obstructed a rape investigation. And as you're saying this, you're like, so he's back this year. Why? But, you know, he's two. Lovie Smith, you know, they have been awful. They've played three seasons. He's won 9 games. You know, he's in the Big Ten West, so he doesn't have to deal with the Michigan schools or the Buckeyes. And, you know, they're not exactly getting a lot of love. You got Gus Malzahn, who, you know, because of the fact that he was the offensive coordinator when they won it in 2010. And I believe Malzahn was the coach when they lost to Florida State in 2013. So 5 years goes by pretty quickly. And whatever goodwill you built up among a program and a support staff that, yeah, they lost the BCS championship his first year there. Since then, they've been to one major bowl. So, yeah, he's on the hot seat. There's your top five. There's a couple other interesting things I want to intertwine into the soon-approaching 5 o'clock hour, which is coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Have you ever been to a volcano?